And now that everybody can hear us,
we're joined.
Do it again.
Here we go. We're doing this once again. We're joined in Yuma, Arizona. I'm here with Phil. I'm Vincent. And who's this guy? This is Mike Christensen. We're here, Yuma, Arizona, for the Monster X Tour. First ever in-person podcast. Now, like we were saying, Mike, like I said, self-explanatory, but how did you get started in the motorsports industry?
Oh, man, I got to explain that again?
Yes.
Son of a... All right. Well, most of you pretty much know my dad's been doing this for 28 years. I was five when he started. He kind of created and came out with Dragon Slayer years and years ago. He had, you know, Dragon Slayer misbehaving. Then when he finally kicked his other half to the curb, we then came out with his mischievous for my stepmom, who's basically my mom now. Had that and Captain Insano, had BJ Johnson involved in our team for a couple years, and now he grew up to four trucks, and then he got rid of two trucks and still has Dragon Slayer throughout it all. But you know, he has some cool new upcoming things that he's getting ready to do for his 29th and 30th year. He is trying to make it to his 30 years of Dragon Slayer. And so 2 years ago, me and Paul created our own team, Throttle Monsters. And now we got Vendetta and Kamikaze, and we've already came out with Rockwell Red later on, or earlier this year. We were supposed to debut Rockwell and Wrecking Machine at Santa Clara for Monster Jam, but with COVID and everything, that couldn't happen. But, you know, we did it anyways. We got the new Wrecking Machine out, and still got Rockwell going. So we got four trucks. We just bought a new addition to the team not too long ago. I'll let you guys do a little sneak peek on that later on. And we also got a fifth truck that we're getting ready to build. So we're steadily growing, getting bigger, hopefully getting better, and let's see how the year goes.
I'd say you guys are like the fastest growing team in the business right now. I mean, seems like you got a new truck every other month.
Almost. I mean, it kind of sucks because it's a lot of work. But, you know, we only have these four trucks. We've been running a couple trucks for Danny Torgensen, all of his stuff. You know, we've hired some guys to come in and run the trucks and try to fix them up and get them turned around and get them reliable pieces. Been having a lot of issues with them. There's just been a lot of old, wore-out stuff that's been on them. But we're slowly chipping away on them and trying to make them into reliable trucks so they can go out and do a show and be reliable.
So before I hand it over to Phil for a minute, you know, this truck right behind us, Vendetta, you know, perfect fit for you. How did you come up with Vendetta?
Vendetta is a name that me and my wife actually came up with. I've always really been the black sheep of the family, the black sheep of the industry. I mean, I've had a lot of people always against me and always basically tell me what I can and cannot do. And that was after I already left my dad and, you know, kind of grew up, you know, moved on to like Monster Jam and Jim Creedon. And, you know, it's just been, had a lot of things up against me. Like nothing would ever go my way. And so this was my way of coming out with my own thing, my own name, my own attitude, and basically just having a vendetta against everybody. So another retrospect, I can, you know, basically tell everybody to kiss my, you know what, and this is what I got now.
We've made it work so far. Make sure everyone that's listening right now, make sure you like and share this podcast. We're on at a different time than usual. So make sure everybody knows that we're live right now. We're live in person with Mike Christensen. And you know, Mike, you grew up in the business. We know your father. We know your very large tree of monster truck drivers in your family. Did you ever feel like a pressure that you had to be a monster truck driver, or was that always your decision?
No, I mean, it was always talked about, but all of my brothers and sisters done it. They've all, you know, some were very successful at it. Some were not. And I think my biological sister is the only one that's never actually drove a truck. But everybody else, step family or family, they've broke off and done their own thing, where I don't know if it wasn't never really pressured, but it was something that we knew we were going to do, whether it was with Craig or without Craig. I mean, I did it until I basically graduated in a couple years, you know, but working with family is always hard sometimes. And sometimes you don't get along, sometimes you do. And I kind of wanted to step out of the shadow of Craig, because it was like, that was the excuse that I had from everybody, is I'm only where I'm at because of my dad. Well, I wanted to grow without being in the shadow of him. And so that's when I actually took over Lindsey Wink at Monster Jam with his truck and Lucas Oil. And we were really successful. Like, he did a really good job, and I loved Wink. He was a great guy to be a part of. And we blended well together. Like we could, we were, those, you know, hand in hand with each other. Like I knew exactly what he needed. He knew what he expected from me. Everything just worked out great. And, I mean, he was probably the best driver I've ever had to deal with. Still talk to Wink this day. He's a good friend of mine. And, you know, even working with Jim, Wink was a guy that I would call and, you know, kind of get input and what to do, what not to do, what are easy ways to piss Jim off, what are not ways to piss Jim off. And, you know, it was just fun to have that retrospect to step out away from the family and kind of grow on my own. And then Monster Jam kind of died off and I wanted to actually become a driver. And I had multiple things and multiple promises that was, I was going to be one, and it never happened. And so I had personal things I had to go and take care of. I left Monster Jam, and then Jim Creighton came calling. So we don't have enough time today to talk about my history with Jim.
I'm sure we'll talk about some of the highlights in a bit.
I'm sure we will.
But, you know, you grew up in the business, and it's always in your blood, whether you decided to or not. How old were you when you first competed in an event?
I was 15.
15, and where was it?
Inwood, Ontario, Canada.
And how was that experience?
You know, it was the whole day. I remember my parents told me that, you know, you're nervous. You just need to, you know, calm down. Just, you know, drink water, drink Gator, just, you know, keep yourself hydrated. And I didn't think I was nervous. Like, I was just calm, cool, and collected. Didn't really have a whole lot to say. I was just kind of kept eye on the truck, just making sure everything was going to work well. And actually, I made it to the final round. And I had my dad, he was in Spider-Man at the time, I was in Dragon Slayer, and I actually beat him in the finals. And since it was me and him in the finals, they then redid the bracket for freestyle. And they put us, I was like second to last, and then he was last. And they gave me a score of 28, and I was like pumped, you know, that I got such a high score. And so he then went out there and barrel rolled Spider-Man down the dirt track, and he actually got like a 31 or something. So I was like, well, crap, couldn't even double down on my first show. But, you know, we had Barefoot, we had Bigfoot, like we had good guys there. And I mean, I had Bigfoot in the second round and I wasn't expecting to beat him, but I actually took Brian out and Bigfoot. So it was a kind of a cool experience, kind of cool to just step right in it. And I mean, I did exactly what he said, put the pedal to the floor and hit second and hold on.
And you continued to learn as you got more seat time. And, you know, your dad had a lot of different trucks and a lot of different identities. Was there a certain truck in his fleet that stuck out to you the most, that was your favorite? Or
I mean, the whole Captain Insano thing is something that me and BJ kind of created together. We were actually sitting at home and watching The Waterboy, and that's where the name came from. Mm-hmm. Is that was the wrestler's name in the movie, and we thought it'd be kind of a funny, cool thing to come out with. But that was the time that my parents were getting divorced. You know, we really weren't going to have BJ drive Misbehaving. That would just kind of be weird. And so he created the name, or we had the name, you know, that we were going to use. And that was kind of a cool truck because it was something that I had a part of to create. But it was always fun to drive Dragon Slayer. Like, there's just so much history with it. And, you know, it was something that my dad created that started from my elementary school class when I was in kindergarten. That's where the name actually came from. It was in a contest or something like that. One of the kids in my class actually came out with it, or, you know, mentioned it. And just the history, trying to follow in the footsteps at the young age, that it was always cool to just take over his name.
So now, when you were getting into the business at the same time, BJ Johnson was right there with you. Yeah. And was there always like a competitive edge between you guys, you know, try to one-up each other? Or was always teammates?
At that point, I wasn't in the seat yet.
Okay.
I mean, I was still just a crew guy, and, you know, I'd go in the road with him in the summertime. It wasn't until I actually got to drive, you know, for Jim, I think in 2017, 2018, mm-hmm. is when I was on the same tour with him that I actually got to compete head-to-head with him. So that was kind of cool because I was in Outlaw, he was in Gas Monkey, and it was, you know, it's nice to go back and run against old ex-employees or, you know, people that you grew up with. You know, it's no different than racing against, like, my dad and my brother.
Right.
Like, they're the first two guys that I want to beat every time we line up. You know, and now that we got four trucks and all my drivers, like, I don't want to lose to any of them, whether it's Jeff or Tutal or Dawson, Paul, Zach. Like, we're all competitive, and we like to be the top dog of the team.
So we got a question here from Chris Walquist. I actually want to know this myself. He says, could we see a diecast toy of Vendetta or Kamikaze at some point?
Possibly. I mean, there's been talks of different companies that have been wanting to do it. Kamikaze is actually not approved to run at Monster Jam events. That was one downfall that we had when we did Houston a couple years ago. But you know, Paul then was able to run the Rod Ryan model for him. I guess too much, too sensitive, I guess, so to speak, on the topic, I guess. But it'd be cool to have a kamikaze truck because it's the truck that Paul created and it's, you know, Paul's name. But maybe somewhere else. It's a different place. But there's been talks about it.
Another question from Levi Shones. He wants to know who's been your biggest rival in the industry. I'd like to know how happy you are with Team Throttle Monster's growth over the past couple of years.
Well, biggest rival, I'd probably have to say, would be Paul. There's always a lot of crap talking between the two of us. I mean, but you have that with siblings. And he's the brother that you never want to lose to. Because the moment you lose to him, you're never going to hear the end of it. But then the moment you beat him, there's always an excuse on why you beat him. What broke? What happened? But, you know, it's just always fun to bust his balls a couple times and to put a good whooping on him. And the growth of the team, I mean, we imagined our team to be a two-truck team, to be competitive. It was our cousin, Zach, who owns the Rockwell truck, well, at least owns the chassis, the body, or not the body, the truck. It's one of our bodies. It's one of our names. But he wanted to build a truck. He wanted to be more involved. He wanted to be more, so to speak. And once he built his truck, we then built a third truck to go with it because it made sense to run four trucks instead of running a third truck by itself. But, you know, now we just have so many things and so many promoters that want the third truck to run at. Send them off and have four other race trucks out doing shows.
So, you know, over these past couple months, you're one of the few teams that's been active in the industry. You know, one of the few teams on the West, to be specific. You know, what's it been like these past couple months? You know, the industry's a little crazy right now.
Right. It's, you know, it's been kind of hectic just because with everything going on. There's been places that have been really good to us, and then there's been places that have just kind of sucked. But I mean, we're not forcing anybody or demanding people to come to our events. Like it's open to anybody. We know that there are some people that are, you know, afraid or worried about the whole COVID thing, and we completely respect that. But I'm pretty thankful that we are in the position we're in, that we've been able to go out there and do shows. And there's been tons of different states and counties and mayors and governors. And I mean, there's been a lot of people that we've had to kind of, you know, play by the rules. And it's not only been us. I mean, Skyler with Live a Little has done the same thing. Danny Torrenson and the Monster X guys and Paul and Danny and MTE. I mean, there's been a lot of people involved to get these shows to where they are for us to continue to do shows week in and week out. It's worked well for us because we've had four trucks. We can go in and do a small little show and everybody can, you know, make money and put on a good show and make a name that we can come back next year and do something bigger and better.
So you say that was like a blessing in disguise that you were able to just expand your team so rapidly because there wasn't really any events going on. It was kind of like the first on base, you got the advantage.
Yeah. I mean, when we built it, we weren't expecting all this to happen. I mean, I don't think anybody was. And we had stuff lined up for the other two trucks to go do. But then once this happened and we had really nothing, we're in debt and building the trucks and having them, and it made no sense to park everything when we had everything to do a show. And so we had to figure out ways and figure out different places that we could go into, and it worked out. I mean, we didn't have any home runs by any means, but you know, we were able to make ends meet, cover costs, cover expenses, and everybody could still keep a job and do what we love.
And when not only everyone got to keep a job, but you've added new jobs. You brought on new people to the team in so many different capacities. What was that process like? You know, you got guys like David Tuttle Olfert here, and you got the Sousas are more involved, and you got guys like Michael Brister also driving. Yep. Where did all that kind of come from? What was the selection like?
I mean, there was quite a few guys that were out there that wanted to do it. Some of them didn't have CDLs. Some did. One guy I know wanted to do it, but he had other events that he wanted to go and do personally. And I understood, But it didn't make any sense for me to bring him on and him only come for 2 weeks and then have to leave for 3 weeks. So I needed guys here that could, you know, rapidly work into the motions, understand their process, and then continue on. Where Brister, I've known through Monster Jam. I mean, his first year was my last year there. And he was really quiet and standoffish and kind of shy. But, I mean, he worked well. He did a good job. And over the years, he's kind of opened up and became more of a, I don't want to say a loud mouth, but, you know, he's just more of a leader working on trucks. We got Michael Gromick, Cheech, Big Cheech, whatever people call him. I call him, but I can't say it on air. But, you know, he's a good friend of Brister's. He works pretty good. Then I also got Rudy Del Campo, Martin, whatever the hell his name is. We call him Rudy Jensen because he is like Paul's golden boy. Rudy can do no wrong. Paul will save him. Doesn't matter what the case is. And, you know, but we got Rudy in a truck. Rudy's also driving one of Danny's trucks. It's the Hang Loose. And first couple of weeks, he's done pretty good. But now he's starting to open it up a little bit more, trying to take risks and get big air. And he's starting to realize that monster trucks actually beat the crap out of you. And, you know, with an old piece that, you know, you just got to go through the motions and still put on a good show and have fun with it. But he's slowly starting to realize that big air is not the topic that he should be achieving with the truck that he's in. But everybody's worked well together. David Tuttle, he was a hard guy to convince to come on board. He was kind of burned out and over the whole monster truck life, and he wanted a first quarter off. And I mean, I kind of gave him a sweet deal. He had a brand new CRD to come to. He could help build it, help fit it for himself. And after about 4 months of bugging him nonstop from last October till about January, I finally broke him. Finally convinced him to come down, and he came on board. Dawson, I met at the Phoenix Fair last year. He used to work for Bill Payne. He wanted something different, something new, and he's been a good guy to bring on board. Understands a lot, knows a lot. It'd be better if he had a CDL, but, you know, we'll get there.
So earlier this year, you had a pretty big tour. It's the toughest monster truck tour. Let's start from the beginning for a second here. Prescott Valley, you took the first racing championship of the year.
Yep.
Against Paul Jensen. Now, how did that win feel?
The win felt good, but he won the overall. And so, the issue was, you know, well, yeah, you beat me in racing, but I won the overall. I mean, that's the competitiveness we talked about earlier between me and him. And, I mean, the next day he swept the whole thing. Like, he won everything. And so he knew that, you know, it was going to be a hard year. It was going to be a tough year. I mean, because Jerry Beck is no slouch. You had Diesel Dave in Bigfoot. And then you had Tim Jones and Brandon Budd and Bailey Shea. Like, there was so much competition at all these shows that anybody could win it. Like, it was a toss-up every week. And once you figure out the truck and how the dirt's going to work and the ramps, that's the cool thing about Toughest is almost every single week, it's the exact same ramps, it's the exact same jumps. The turns are about the same distance from each other. Like, it's just, it's so repetitive and so consistent that you just got to stay consistent and you can do well. And I'm pretty sure in my interviews with Scott Heaton throughout the tour, that was my main thing. Stay consistent and you can win. Now, I think I won 5 or 6 races all year throughout Toughest. And if you can do well in racing and do top 3 in freestyle, your chances of winning overall are pretty good. And I think I won 6 or 7 of them. I'm not quite sure how many. But it put me 18 points ahead. I won the championship, even though it had ended early. Some people disagree with that. Some people think that, you know, someone had more points. But by the time you reach a certain point, you're, I think, 4 lowest scores drop off. So it kind of brings the points closer together. So you kind of, it's kind of like a playoff with NASCAR. Points reset, competition gets tighter. That way you battle throughout the year all the way up until championship weekend in Grand Forks.
And you eventually were crowned the champion of the tour, right?
Yes.
How was that moment? I know it wasn't, you know, an in-person celebration, but how was that moment, you know, winning a tour?
I mean, it's – to me, it was kind of an unexplainable. Like it was something that you always try to achieve, right? You know, and not doing it at the show is what sucks. But I was home. I was with my wife and my kids, and you know, like it was kind of cool to celebrate it with them. And then, I mean, Paul and Brian, they all thought that they'd be funny about it and, you know, make up excuses about how they're just going to roll the points over to next year and they're not going to crown a champion. And they knew that it would just piss me off and I would just probably start mother effing everybody. But Paul couldn't really keep a secret. It only lasted about 15 minutes. And then he walked up to me and he's like, all right, bro, I can't keep this from it. They're going to crown you the champ. They're just going to wait until they do a post and then you can do something about it. So, I mean, it's kind of cool. It sucks that it was cut early. I mean, I think we missed 6-7 rounds maybe. And who knows? You never know what those 6-7 rounds would have had in store. We had, I think, Lafayette and Loveland, Colorado left. Independence, Missouri was already canceled, so we knew we weren't doing that one. And then we had championship weekend. So a lot of things could have happened in between Saginaw and the championship round. But I felt like I was in a pretty good position to carry on the momentum and make it all the way to Grand Forks ahead. But it was awesome. I mean, I wish we could have done the whole thing because I know everybody's going to be talking that, you know, it's not a legitimate championship. But it was more than halfway. So, I mean, I guess you put yourself in the right position sometimes, you're going to win it.
Yeah, and, you know, another tour you guys run with Team Throttle Monster is the Monster Truck Insanity Tour. This is a perfect transition question while we're on the topic of tours. Chris Walquist wants to know, how do you like running on the Monster Truck Insanity Tour?
That's probably one of my favorite tours ever. I mean, the guys are great. I love Skyler to death. He's like a brother to me. Spencer and Curtis, Brock, Brittany. I mean, there's so many great people there that just make that show so well. Like, they're fun to do. You automatically know what you're going to come into. You already know how the track's going to be. You already know your competition. And, I mean, they bring in good trucks. And so it's just always fun to come in there and have fun with everybody. When you're with a promoter and with a group of guys, that there's no stress, there's no drama, there's no bullcrap. You can just go in, do your job, and come out. It's probably the funnest shows that I do.
See, we have another fan comment here from Nick Miguez. He says, hey, Mike, have you seen any toolboxes lately?
Or nope. Hit any big jumps.
He says. Or have you hit any big jumps?
Hit any big jumps. I'm not quite sure what the hit big jumps is. The toolbox, no, I mean, I'm pretty sure Nick knows exactly where those toolboxes are. So if you can't find it, maybe you should ask your dad where the toolboxes are.
And make sure, guys, if you're listening live right now, you're liking and sharing this video so you can hear Mike's story and get your comments and questions in. I'm sure his phone's blowing up. So if you're, make sure you're watching, make sure you share this video so some other folks can tune in as well. One of those is being the boss, I see, on the caller ID. Now,
yep.
Kind of hinted at wanting to come out and do your own thing. And eventually it came time to where you moved on from Team KCM and you joined up with Monster Jam and Felt Motorsports. What was that decision from leaving the family business to what is the largest monster truck team and promoter?
Well, at that time, the Team KCM really didn't exist. In 2008, Craig sold everything.
Right.
And, you know, one truck went to Barry Parkins, the other one went to Donald Epididio. And he really didn't have anything. And I was just at home and not doing a whole lot. I think Mike Wells called my dad and wanted to know if he had anybody that could really, you know, work on trucks. They needed some good, reliable people. And probably 10 days later, I was landing in Norfolk, Virginia, going down to Digger's Dungeon. And I've never been there personally myself. Henry Cross picked me up, and he actually thought I was Paul. So when I came walking out, he's like, oh, man, I thought you were tall. No, that's my other brother. Oh, all right, well, crap, I guess you'll work. Well, I hope. And, I mean, the rest has been kind of history. As soon as I started, though, I was automatically teamed up with Craig. Like, I was in charge of him and Donkey Kong and Rod Schmidt and Digger. And, you know, if you want to see a lot of things tore up, you crew for Rod Schmidt and Digger. Because that guy tore up everything. But, you know, it was fun. I enjoyed it. That company gave me the opportunity to travel the world to do what
right.
I love. I mean, I went to Panama and Costa Rica and Spain and England and Poland. Anybody that ever goes out of the country, go to Poland. That was probably my favorite place I've ever gone. So it's just such a cool history place. And I mean, people there are awesome. So
when you joined up with Monster Jam, and actually I see a comment here from
John Seesock,
two-time world champion. He said, proud of you. Do you have any fun stories from John Seesaw?
I do know that John is petrified of snakes.
Okay.
And one year in Vegas, he was teamed up with Alex, and I was thrown on that team because I think that was my first year there. And we would always, me and Howie, would always find these rubber snakes. He would hide them in his truck. And John would come in, and he would be setting up his helmet and his horns, making sure everything was right. And then you would hear him scream, and next thing you know, you'd see a rubber snake flying out the side of the window of Batman. You know, and it's just, John's one of those old school, awesome guys that, you know, always just hang out with him and Alex. I mean, they're probably the two funnest guys on my tour at that time to hang out with. And Alex Blackwell is even, he's a phenomenal dude. That guy's such an awesome dude, will help anybody. But I think it's because we're a lot alike. Like, we just don't have any time for, you know, stupid people. And, you know, he just basically says it how it is. John's a really good dude to, you know, to hang out with, to crew for, to drive with. It's just too bad that his career ended when it did. He probably still had a lot of years left, but I mean, now he's probably like my dad and Lupe Souza and everybody else. They're old and getting out of it.
Yeah, I said, not funny. I hate snakes.
He told you.
You know, we were talking about John Seesaw. He's driven a lot of trucks in his career, and one of his notable trucks is Batman.
Correct.
And I know when you went over to work for Monster Jam, you were mainly a crew chief, but you did have a couple opportunities to drive. Did you not drive Batman one time?
I did drive Batman, but I think at that time Norm Miller was
there. Right.
He was already in Grinder. Because then that would have been the year that my dad was in Max-D in the new style Max-D. Norm was his teammate, and so I drove Batman a couple times, and I also got the opportunity my last year there to drive Daniel Bradshaw's Monster Energy. I drove it in Reno.
Yep.
And I actually made it to the finals Sunday, and Donald Titan beat me, but then I drove Batman a couple times in Napa and Chattanooga and somewhere else. I mean, I know I drove three or four times for him. But that was the starting curve of, you know, like me wanting to drive. They knew that. I knew that. And it just, you know, nothing could ever come together and make it work. So here I am now.
And we are by an airfield.
We're by an airfield. So if you hear planes, we're also at an active racetrack. There's an event here in a couple hours. If you hear a lot of background noise, bear with us. That's what you get, live broadcast right by some monster trucks. We're joined here by Mike Christensen. And Mike, you know, talking about your Monster Jam career. As I don't know where that plane's going, but you had an opportunity to drive Batman. You had an opportunity to drive Monster Energy. Other than those driving opportunities, what was your favorite moment from being a crew chief with Monster Jam?
Favorite moment, man, that's a thinker. You know, when I first teamed up with Lindsay, we started in Baltimore, and everybody was telling me that Lindsay's a hard guy to work for. He's really quiet, standoffish, shy. Doesn't really do a whole lot, doesn't really say a whole lot. Him and Billy Jr., they worked well together, but they were kind of a lot alike. Well, I've known Lindsay since he worked with Don Frankish.
Right.
Like, he was an old school independent dude. He knows the ropes just like I do. I mean, the independent world is completely different than Monster Jam world. I mean, in an independent life, everything comes out of your own pocket. You own everything that's in your trailer top to bottom. And it's not like we have thousands and thousands of dollars worth of parts in our trailer. So when certain things break, you're trying to figure out a way how to fix it if you can. And we started off, I think, like 7 shows right in a row, one of them together. Baltimore, Cincinnati, Philadelphia. And then I think we then went into first quarter, and we were really successful right off the bat. We did such a great job together, and I then completely revamped the whole Lucas Oil thing. That's when the red lights came in on the truck. Fuel cell. It's when the red came in on the truck. Then we did SEMA show with it. I mean, we just meshed well together. But the coolest thing I remember doing was MetLife Stadium, and he did a double backflip. Well, he did a backflip, landed it, drove around, and then he actually came on the headset. He's like, "Dude, what do I do now?" Screw it, go for another one. Went right back up, did another one, and then both rear spindles blew off. The only downfall is like we kind of got reprimanded for that because supposedly the red light was on, but the red light came on halfway through his second backflip, so he got a horrible score. He should have won it,
right?
But can't predict it.
Another comment from Steven Anderson. He says, "Good dude there. Mike is a great human, a great dancer too. Is there any backstory behind the dancing?
Yeah, shut up, Steve. Yeah, my one of my kids thought it'd be cool for me to do a TikTok. So she put this on, I think it was Facebook, that if she got 50 comments or whatnot to for her TikTok, that I'd have to do it. Well, she got 50-plus comments, and so I felt kind of obligated to do it. But then they were kind of running their mouth and just being funny. Bam, my other kid was wearing a Friends t-shirt. And if you guys don't know me, but I absolutely love Friends. I can tell you what happens in every Friends episode. And she was wearing a Friends t-shirt, and I told her I'd wear it. Oh, yeah, it was a crop top. Yeah. And so I put that thing on and just let my belly out and let her go.
That was a funny video. But Skyler just commented. He says, Vendetta plus Live a Little equals bromance. So, do you have any good Skyler stories?
Yeah, I do. Me and Sky, like, he's probably one of my best friends. I love that dude. He, everybody, you know, gives us crap that, you know, we're bros in love. But he made a shirt that had the silhouette of my truck with the Live a Little logo on it. And on the bottom it says hashtag bromance. And so, like, at his shows where I do freestyle, I'll literally drive right by him, and I'll throw him the hashtag sign as I drive by him. But no, he's a good dude. There's a lot of things that I can say about him, but I don't know if I will right now. Yeah, he is a regional national clogging champion. I'll give you that.
All right.
Yeah. Well, there's some history there on that one. We got some plans, though. We'll meet up. I'm sure we'll be doing some more dance videos for you guys.
And I'm sure Skyler will want to talk about all the fun on Live a Little Productions. We'd love to have him here on the podcast.
Absolutely.
Once he gets some events rock and rolling.
Yep. No, he'd be a good dude to get a hold of, and I'm sure he'd be happy to do this.
Love to have him. We love their support.
Yep.
And another one from Chase Moyes. He says, how's it like driving with family? We touched the surface on that.
It's competitive. That's the roots of my whole career. I mean, I started with my dad, my mom a little bit. And then once my stepmom kind of got involved, and my stepbrother, Paul, and that's where a lot of people get confused. Paul and even my Paul's mom, I mean, I don't look at them as step. They're my brother, it's my mom. Like, there's really no steps in our family. Now, in my actual family, there's a lot of problems there. But competing with my brother, with my dad. I even have a brother-in-law that drives. My nephew started driving a little bit here and there. But even people like Corey Clark. I mean, I've known Corey since I was 8, 9 years old. He's practically family to us. And so when you line up to him, you want to beat him so badly that it's embarrassing. But it's no different than like Too Tall and Jeff and Hunter. Like, you roll up to them, like, you want to beat them. You want to spank them. You want them to be embarrassed that they just got their ass handed to them by you on the track. And that's with anybody that's family, though. But it's fun.
Well, I think when we mapped it out, and the branches can go so far and wide, kind of like how this podcast goes far and wide, there's so many people in the family tree from the Christensen family, Christensen, yeah. Jensens, and then you get some other last names and people that, like Corey Clark's, have been there forever. Yep. It's got to be crazy when you think about it. I mean, there's such legendary families like the Andersons, and then you got the Benz Eichelberger dynamic, right. And so many others. The Christensens are the largest, and they've accomplished just as much.
Well, I don't know if we've accomplished just as much. Man, my dad keeps calling me. And, you know, the Andersons are a hard group of guys to reel in. I mean, all of them are just phenomenal. And their dad has by far the best throttle rhythm of anybody that has ever stepped foot in a monster. And, you know, but Ryan and Adam and Kristen, they're not that far behind them. I mean, I enjoy watching the crap that they pull out of their freestyle runs, their racing runs. I mean, they do some insane, wild crap. They're like, dude, there is no way in hell that you actually just accomplish that.
Right.
And they do. Like, they are phenomenal drivers. My first 2 years that I drove for Jim, I had Ryan on my tour, and he was the one guy that I could not move. Ryan, I hate you, because it didn't matter what I did, right. What he did, mm-hmm. Like, he would just always have my number. And we met a couple times in final rounds, mm-hmm. And still cannot get by.
Well, do you know who else was on that tour with you?
You.
Me.
Yeah.
That must have sucked.
No, not to make it personal, but I remember sitting there. That was my first day on the job, Tampa in 2017. Yep. couple months back, I was like Mike's like pseudo crew chief at an event, and it was maybe the most train wreck of a crew chief experience ever. Over at it was in Chandler, Arizona, at the drag strip.
Oh yeah,
yes, nice. Ross were there driving. Yep. Yes, so
yeah, I remember that.
I'm sure Mike got out
all alone.
Yes, and that's how I became his pseudo crew chief.
Yeah,
and I'm sure when Mike was leaving there, he's like, I never want to see this kid again.
I didn't want to see anybody there. And actually, that was the first time I met Jacob.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he was there with
He was there
everybody.
With Sam. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I knew of him, but I never physically met him. And apparently, like, I did not leave a good first impression with him. Because like a couple months later, I saw him at another show. And I'm like, oh, hey, what's up, Jake? Good to see you, blah, blah, blah. And just start, you know, chit-chatting. And then next thing you know, he's like, man, the first time I met you, man, you were dick. I'm like, wait, what? I was? When? Then he explained. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay.
Well,
I know why.
Well, see, that's why I love you, Mike. Is it fast forward a couple months later, we're sitting there at the show office at Raymond James Stadium. I'm first day on the job. You come walk in the show office, and you just look at me, and you're like, what the heck are you doing
yeah.
here? Oh, I work here now.
Yeah. Man, they would hire anybody then, wouldn't they?
But that would have been a great experience for you. Driving on a Monster Jam tour, but with a team like with Two Extreme Racing and driving Iron Outlaw. So how did that come about where you stepped away from Monster Jam and fast forward, now you're driving Iron Outlaw?
Well, I had personal things come up in my life. I got a divorce and was fighting for custody for my kids, and I wanted to step away and move back home. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't live in Florida and have to deal with all that down there. And I was actually a mailman for like a year, year and a half.
Oh, wow.
Worst job ever. Nobody ever did it.
Okay.
Post office sucks. Not a good job for anybody. Like, whoever works there, they must hate life that mm-hmm. bad, because that is not a job for me. But Jim, actually Cameron, Nick's dad, called me mm-hmm. looking for a driver, looking for someone to come and help run the team. I think it was at the time, it was a Trent. Yeah, it was a Trent. Did it with Trent Montgomery. The first year was great. I mean, we didn't really have a whole lot of problems, but it was only kind of part-time, just here and there when needed.
Well, that was kind of the, what, all northern tour? What was the term that they used?
Tundra tour.
Tundra tour,
yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sucked. It was cold. It was a lot better than delivering mail, so. But, you know, we had a good year. We had great guys.
Yeah.
You know, we had Cam McQueen. We had Sean Newhan. You know, we had a lot of awesome people. That's actually where I met Brister.
Yes.
He was mm-hmm. on that tour with the Norman sisters. We're Norman brothers. Sorry.
Hey, us Phil's got to stick together. We love you, Phil. And,
no,
and Christian.
Well,
okay.
You got my good buddy Travis Palm in the comments. He wants to know about Houston and what it was like driving in a huge stadium like that. I believe you guys were running the Rod Ryan truck.
Well, you've been there a lot of times
yeah,
in Houston
been, yeah.
under Iron Outlaw, but that's also a big coming out party. You brought Vendetta, and then Paul's truck ran
right.
as Rod
yeah,
Ryan.
He wants to know when you guys drove
so,
there.
When we drove there?
Or how was it like driving in that stadium?
Well, I mean, I've done a lot of stadiums. Tampa was my first stadium.
Right.
That I did in Outlaw. I mean, but I've done stadiums before in the past. But, you know, doing a full tour, it's so crazy, because when you go into doing stadiums like Tampa and Arlington, my by far favorite one is actually Toronto. And it's just it's such a big place that it just, it's amazing how big a stadium is. Arlington's kind of a cool one. It's, you know, kind of sucks to park rigs there and have to drive them, have them walk
right
into the building. But, you know, Arlington Stadium, it's like a little tiny town inside the building. You know, you can't even be carrying a soda around the bottom
no.
place.
Mm-mm.
Like, I had one security lady, you know, like, freak out on me because I'm carrying a Monster. I'm like, well, Jesus, all right, I'll just walk around and I'll walk through the floor. Never mind.
Ultra Zeroes.
You know, but Houston's also a favorite one of mine.
Right.
There's been a lot of history of Houston with me and Wink. Mm-hmm. Me and Wink have done good with Houston. And coming in there with my own truck and even an Outlaw, like, it's just, it's the atmosphere at some stadium shows is bar fun. Nothing that you could ever imagine. Once you roll onto that floor and you're like, holy crap. But my favorite one is actually Anaheim.
Okay.
My dad's done Anaheim for many years. Before it turned into Monster Jam Fell, that was back in the like SFX days and Ace Motorsports and USHRA. So Anaheim was one that we always did. That and Qualcomm. Nobody does Qualcomm anymore. It's obviously the stage getting tore down, but those California, Southern California shows were probably my favorite. Actually being able to do Anaheim in Outlaw, and that was actually where I landed my first backflip.
Yes.
In Iron Outlaw.
Well, that was also your first attempt at a backflip. So yes. where was that process going on? Because I'll tell you what was going on in my headset when you were doing that flip. But what was it like in the driver's seat about to do something that you've never done before?
Well, the week before, Austin did it in Arlington.
Yes.
And he landed it.
Yes.
And then the next day, Jim calls me and it was like, you know, how bad's the truck? How bad's the body? You know, I heard you did a backflip, and why did you do a backflip? And oh my goodness, like, I don't need you guys doing backflips every week. I'm like, all right, no big deal. Austin hops in the rig as soon as we leave the hotel room, and he's like, oh yeah, man, Jim was, you know, like, ecstatic, said, good job, you did awesome, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, wait a minute. Like, he was kind of pissed that you did it. He's telling you good job. Why is he telling you good job? Like, don't tell me the complete opposite.
Right.
So going into Anaheim, we're like, you know what? I'm going to do it. You did one. Got away with it. Now it's my turn. And so we planned going into it that one of us is going to do it. Whoever did it first, you're going to lay low for the other guy to do it the next week. Mm-hmm. He did it in Arlington. I think the week after we were actually in Oklahoma City, but we weren't there.
Right. Yeah.
But then we went to Anaheim.
Yes.
And so we go out to Anaheim, and the first night I was actually going to do it, and my truck shut off. Well, I finally got it to refire, and actually I was sitting in the truck waiting for them to tell me to fire up.
Yeah.
That's why I sat there. And then once they actually came out and told me to fire up, they then told me that my time's up, just pull off. Well, then I was pissed at Brett because that was their rule. You had to wait for someone to tell you to fire up. So I did what they wanted me to do, and I still had probably, I think, like 30 seconds left. So I then kind of got cut short on their mishap. Wasn't my fault. It was theirs. So the next day, it happened again. Well, I was not waiting for anybody. I did not give two shits who I was waiting on. I was firing right up, and I was going to go for it.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what I did. Truck died. I fired up, jumped the cars over in front of me, and I went right for it. And I just kept remembering what Waters Jr. kept telling me. The moment you're in it, you stay in it until you see dirt. So that was just playing over and over in my head. Just come up to it with some speed. Not a whole lot, but walking speed. As soon as it hits, you just pin it until you see dirt. So I was just hoping for the best and praying to God that it came around and I didn't ruin Jim's body, and I actually landed it.
And you landed it, and I tell you, the crowd reaction was something I'll never forget. You know, I'm sitting there with the headset on. I'm on a channel with all of the hosts or the announcers plus the AV team controlling all the sound in the video. And part of my job at that point was to kind of throw in little statistics or fun facts. And at that point of the tour, you know, we knew Mike was a seasoned veteran. We knew your dad because we had your bio video with a big picture of your dad in front of Miss Mayhem pop up. And we knew the Mike story. So when you went after that backflip, I was jumping up like a schoolgirl because I was so excited. Because at that point, you know, nobody had to be cleared to do a backflip. It was just, if you have the chance,
do it.
You can. It's all fair game. So when you hit that backflip, I'm jumping up like a lunatic.
Right.
And then I get in the headset. I'm like, that's the first time he's ever attempted, and let alone landed, a backflip in his career.
Yeah.
And it just worked out so perfect. So right when you got out of the truck, you got your hands in the air. They announced it.
Yep.
And I kid you not, Mike, it looked like a standing ovation.
Right.
Because at that point, it was a sold-out crowd at Angel Stadium.
Yep.
And I felt the crowd at that point knew that, like, this is like the biggest moment of this guy's career.
Right.
And we just witnessed it.
Yeah.
And so I always tell that story to future hosts and announcers, the importance of learning the people and getting and knowing the statistics, because just that little moment, you just made what an average backflip was a bigger moment for this guy. And it's something, I know, something I would never forget, and it has to be something you never forget either.
No, absolutely not. I mean, there's a couple videos. I think my wife has them on her phone.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have them on my phone now. That she's found that, like, someone did a recording of like a live stream of that show, and you can, you know, like, it shows the whole backflip.
Right.
You can hear the fans' reaction. You can hear the announcer even making his comment about it being my first attempt and successful landing. And then the whole place just goes berserk. Like, just talking about it gives me chills because it's such a refining moment that I had in that truck.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, I'll never be able to experience that again. Until I decided to throw this old whip in the backflip.
Another fun statistic moment. The next one, you got to El Paso.
Yep.
You went for the backflip again.
Yep.
You didn't land it.
The second day I didn't. The first day I did.
First day you did. Second day you did it.
Yes. I had a flat tire.
That was your first rollover of the season.
Yes, it was.
And I said that on the headset, and they said in the microphone, and they're like, is that even right? And I'm like, yeah. We made it all tour. Yep. Last freestyle on the tour.
I roll it.
Roll it.
Yeah.
Not bad.
No. No, not in a stadium tour.
Not bad. And a shout out to all those great hosts, Mitchell, Lola, and Janelle. I love you guys. You guys rocked it on that tour.
Dude, Lola is such a badass chick. I love that chick. She's so cool. She's probably one of the best hosts ever. A lot of people don't know the history of like me and BJ, and she asked me a question because she went up, she did a little Facebook stalking and you know, saw that we were teammates at one time and Lindsay Wink and Candace, and she threw out a comment in an interview, and it didn't sit well with some people, and I really didn't care.
Yeah,
but it didn't sit well, and like I just played it off like it's no big deal. You know, it is what it is. And,
oh my yes.
And I remember that so vividly because right after that it was 15 minutes later she came and found me and apologized. Well, then I kind of played along with it because I was like, oh yeah, that was such bullcrap, like why would you do that? She felt so bad,
right?
But like she's been awesome. I mean, I wish I was on tour with her again. She's just gorgeous.
Lola rocks. I remember at that moment when that happened, it was that point forward where my boss at the time was like, hey, make sure you're feeding, like, you know, the intricacies like everybody else. And so for there that point, and trust me, I love Lola, but I would always get a smile when I'm at an event. I'd be somewhere all inside the country, gonna call a text from Lola just to double check a statistic, right, or right, run some story across, and then she's at her tour and making everybody look like $1 million. That's right. Why I love it. And just even little things like that, because you got to throw it right back. And that's
absolutely, I mean, she would have never known.
Oh,
and,
no,
you know, just by looking at pictures that we had
right
2-3 years ago and seeing us on the same team,
and it made a lot of sense.
It would,
yes.
You know, but she just didn't know the rest of it, and I didn't care. I mean, I don't think he cared, but some people did care, and so it turned into a bigger deal that it didn't really need to be.
But that's always the fun of being on a tour and working with such diverse people. Right. You know, you make the most of it, and at the end of the day, you have great events and you have great memories that last forever.
Yep.
So we talked about the backflip. That was, you know, big moment in your career, and then maybe the answer to this question I'm gonna ask right now. You know, so far, what is the biggest moment in your career that you look back on and say, wow?
You know, I don't know. I mean, the backflip in Anaheim was a pretty big deal. I mean, because there was 60,000+ people there that witnessed it. Another one was, you know, actually finding out that I won the toughest tour. It wasn't how I wanted to win it, but, you know, what better way to find out that I won a championship right next to my wife and kids? I mean, it's not how I wanted it to go out, but someday soon, as soon as Brian Manson sends me my trophy, I'll take a picture of it and I will post that thing all over just to brag about it. I told him to make me two of them so I can put one right on Paul's desk in his office so he can walk by and see the trophy that I won over him every single day. But he says he's not going to do that, so maybe I'll just take a picture of it and, you know, tape it up on his wall or something.
Do you have any more fan comments there, Vinny?
I've got one from Aaron Anderson. He says, what do you think about that Jeff Anderson guy who drove Spike for Team Scream?
Well, I mean, he does some good body work. I showed up to Saginaw late, and horrible story. I did Cave Falls for Live a Little this first quarter. I can't remember where we were. I think I was with Toughest the week before. I don't remember. Maybe Saginaw or Salina. I was in Salina. I had to go home. Did K-Falls, and then my following weekend was in Saginaw. Well, when I left K-Falls, a snowstorm went across Wyoming. I-80 was closed. I-70 was closed. So the only way that I could get from Utah to Saginaw, Michigan, is I had to go all the way down to Amarillo, Texas, and then turn around and cut north. Well, that added like a day and a half to my trip already. That's a two-day trip. And I left K-Falls on Sunday afternoon. We make it 3 hours out of Klamath Falls, and my wife is with me. And both of us got drastically sick, like 102 fever, could not sleep. I was so hot to touch, like in the semi, because that's where we were sleeping at the time, that she had to literally like lay on the floor just to get away from me because I was so burning up. And had to make the miserable trip all by myself, all the way to Saginaw. And, you know, I had showed up with no hood on the truck. And Jeff, both, and Aaron, both, you know, came out and helped me fix the truck and get it all back together. But then at that point, I really didn't care. I didn't put the hood on. I just left the hood off. They fixed it. I'll worry about that next week. I was just so over the trip and being in Saginaw and being sick that I did not care. But went into Saginaw, sweat the first day, and it was actually a pretty good weekend.
So let's flash forward a bit. And one of the trucks over to my left, you guys can see it. Might see it later tonight. Who knows? It's Rockwell Red. How did that sponsorship come about?
Rockwell Red is a watch company out of Salt Lake City. Paul is friends with one of his friends is good friends with Rich, or Paul's good friends with Rich. But we wanted to kind of do something that paid tribute to our Army veterans, or military veterans. And that's what Rockwell Red is about. Red stands for remembering everyone dedicated, remembering everyone deployed. And my dad was in the Army. I've had an uncle that was in the Army. I have a brother-in-law, John Morris, that's Air Force. I mean, so we got, some military guys that are in the military. And it's kind of our way of just, showing our respect to them. And, Rockwell had the idea of the Rockwell Red. They have a whole Rockwell Watch Red line brand that, pays tribute to all of them. So what better way for us to be out of Utah, and they're out of Utah, to come together and debut such a cool thing.
Another truck we have is Wrecking Machine.
Yep.
Now, it started out as Hunter Seuss's Mini Monster.
Yep.
And then you guys took a trophy truck body, threw it on one of the full-size trucks. Now you got a new body, brand new body back here. Same body, I believe, is Rockwell Red.
Yep.
What's the design process with the new paint you guys have?
Well, the Wreck Machine was obviously Hunter's Mini. And I met Jeff through mutual friends years ago when I worked at Monster Jam. And I kind of turned his shop into my shop on the West Coast. He was right out of Turlock, California. And at one point, I think I had 4 or 5 Feld trailers at his house. Like, we had 8 trucks in his driveway. And him and his wife were like, what in the world are you guys doing? But at that time, like, all drivers rode in the rigs. Like, they drove. So
right.
We had Adam, we had Cole, we had myself, Brandon. I mean, there were so many people there.
Oh, man.
And all we did was just, hang out and work on trucks and wash and clean. And everybody got to, hang out with each other. And it's kind of where I met Jeff. And he's just, he opened up his entire place, his facility, his shop, his home. And we just kind of became friends, kind of kept in touch. At that time, he was still driving for, Kelvin Raymer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he did a little work for him. And the last year when me and Paul started Throttle Monsters, we were in Turlock for WJAS. He was there with Tony because he normally drives Enforcer. Jeff being a good friend of mine, I kind of wanted to find a good competitive driver that could step in Paul's truck and drive it when I needed someone to drive. And Paul flies in and out because he's so busy with his construction company that I'm already on the road on my own anyways. I might as well have someone else that can fly in with Paul.
Right.
And Jeff's about the same size as Paul. I wouldn't have to change a whole lot. Just hop in the truck and go and do it. So I had him come up and do Canada with us last year for a throwdown. And he did such a great job that it was just fitting. And what better way for me to repay him by me constantly using the shop, going to his house. I've been there probably, 3 times in the last year and a half. And never complains, never gripes. I throw him in a truck, he gets to drive, somewhat of a new piece. Hunter's always been to shows and helping us out and throwing his time in there. And they kind of wanted to see where he could go, from making the transition to a mini to a full size. So last year we put him in one of Danny's trucks, and he drove the red solo truck as Wrecking Machine. And he actually did a really good job in such a little piece. So we wanted to see what he could do in a new piece. And we built the CRD. Obviously it was going to be one of our trucks, whether it be Hunters or Two Talls or whoever we decide at that time. But that was the truck we were going to make as a Wrecking Machine to debut at Santa Clara. And Hunter's only 17, but he did such a good job in such an old truck that he would probably be a top 5 driver in my perspective once he's over the age of 18. Like, once he's out there competing week in and week out against everybody else, like, he would be a top 5 driver. He automatically gets it. He understands the truck. He understands the rhythm. He knows what he's doing. And we wanted to kind of help create what he could become and they have a family history through a 64 Chevy. It's been passed down several generations, and I think this year the 64 has been handed down to Hunter. And so it kind of made sense to throw a 64 out there for them. They bought the body, and that's what they wanted. And so we then built a mold for it, and now that's what we use for Rockwell as well.
Right.
They tore out of the same truck, yeah. Or out of the same trailer, so it kind of made sense to make them somewhat the same. But it's end-to-end, his design, his name, the body he wanted. And so when he goes out there and barrel rolls it and destroys it, oh, that's on him.
And, you know, it's great working with the Sousas. And if you want to hear more about Jeff and Hunter Sousa, Jeff was on our inaugural episode, and Hunter was part of our Mini Monster Special, which is our third episode. So if you want to hear more about the Sousas, go back in our archives, whether it's on the podcast feed or here on our Facebook page, to hear more about them.
If you want to hear more about them, just, you know, call them or up.
And they're here this weekend in Yuma, Arizona. I'm sure we're going to be talking with them a little bit as the weekend goes on. But, you know, Mike, you are the driver of Vendetta, but it's not just Vendetta. It's the Redline Oil Vendetta.
Correct.
How did that partnership come about, and how supportive has Redline been for you?
I mean, Redline's been a phenomenal company. They started out with Craig and Paul, with Dragon Slayer and Kamikaze when they were still together 2 years ago. And then it was actually a company that Paul reached out to and, you know, got them the sponsorship. And then it moved on to, you know, like, they sponsor now all of us and my dad as well.
Right.
So they, whatever we ask for, they literally have no problems, you know, sending our way, and they always keep us fully stocked of every and any type of oil you can think of. I mean, there is not a drop of oil that is not Redline in our truck. Like, it is Redline top to bottom, and it is reliable, durable stuff. Their gear oil, I don't know what in the world they put in it, but that stuff will crawl up a pole. Like, it is just crazy gear oil, and it's so reliable, and it's probably the best oil I've ever had to work with.
I was gonna say, because you've worked with all different teams, and you've probably dealt with every single oil under the sun. Redline has to be at the top of the line.
Absolutely. I mean, there's not a whole lot of slouch in Lucas Oil, because I was with them for 3 years. They have some good stuff, but I don't know what it is with Redline and what they put in it, but that stuff is just, it's so crazy how good their product is. I mean, and they got wetter for antifreeze, and they got brake fluid, and they got cleaner. I mean, there's just so much stuff that they do that, I mean, everything that they make has just helped us so much in the end. And I mean, they're probably the best oil company we've ever been partnered up with.
So we're reaching the hour mark here. We're actually at the hour mark. And you know, I ask this question every time. One of my favorite questions from Travis Palm, our good buddy. I want to know, what advice do you have for someone wanting to get in the industry?
You know, it just really all depends. The best thing I can tell you is just always work hard, never complain. Find an independent team that's close by you or around you. And, you know, it's going to take a lot of hard work and a lot of dedication of free labor. Yeah, I mean, because the moment you start showing, you know, you're dedicated and you want to work without making the money, a lot of teams will recognize that. The best thing I can tell you is get a CDL, get a commercial driver's license. If you're wanting to work for a company or an independent, passports always help too, because some people do Mexico, Canada. But just, it's a lot of hard work. If you have wife and kids, I wouldn't recommend it, because it puts a strain on family time and being with your spouse. And thank God I have the world's best spouse in the country, the nation, because, I mean, she lets me do pretty much whatever I want, whenever I want, however I want with the trucks. But you know what? The moment I'm home, it's all about my wife and kids. So trucks are the last thing on my mind. I don't care if they sit in the shop for 3 months and I don't do anything to them. I'm ready to be home and fulfill my family role and my family time and not even care about the Vendetta truck.
You know, speaking of your wife, she left a comment early on in our podcast.
Oh, boy.
Says, your first impressions tend to be a little rough sometimes. Then when people get to know you, they realize you're not that big of an a-hole.
True. That is true.
Yes.
I actually have a shirt that says, "Hello, my name is Craig," that I'm wearing right now. The shirt wasn't even made for me. It was actually made by my wife the first day after she met my dad.
There you go.
And so, but you know what? A lot of people think that me and Craig are a lot alike.
Right.
And we're not. We're not pretty. We're not bad guys. We just say how it is. So if I think you're a no good SOB, I'm gonna tell you you're a no good SOB. And if you don't like it, dude, I don't care.
Right.
That's just how it is. And some people can take that and just walk away. Some people tend to fight me on it. And you know what? I don't lose sleep over it, so I don't even care.
Did you just break the chair, Vinny?
Well, so a couple months ago, we had David Tucker on. He blew his chair out. Well, I just did the same thing.
Oh, man. David, if you're watching, we love you. This is all inspiration. That's, yeah.
Dude, what are you doing?
Well, that's my chair. It's okay. So just don't fidget as we enter the fourth quarter of this podcast. Have a couple other go-to questions.
What's going on, funny moments?
So we were talking about Canada, and you said Toronto's your favorite building. That's also my favorite town. I just love going to Rogers Centre. I just love Toronto.
Yep.
And I gotta ask, since we're on the subject of Canada, have you ever been to Grand Prairie?
Oh man, yes.
Yes.
Yes, oh, I have.
Boy. Okay, what was that experience like up in Grand Prairie? Sucked. Grand Prairie, Alberta, Canada.
Hate it. Sucked.
Yeah.
Drive sucks.
Yeah.
Place sucks. It's cold. Doesn't matter what time of year. It's always cold there. I know Brad Shaw is from there.
That's why we're talking about
yeah,
it. That's
I
an
figured.
Inside joke.
I kind of figured. But yeah, no, that place is a hellhole.
Oh, man.
I hated the drive. It was funny because a lot of people know that me and Jim got in a big fight. And I led to stuff in Anaheim. And, we kind of ended on bad terms 1 year. But it was like a month and a half later.
Right.
He called me up. He was like, hey, can you help Christian go to Canada and do a couple shows and then go over to, I think Maine or wherever the hell we were going. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Jim's routing is like he closes his eyes and throws a dart.
It's like Harold and the Purple Crayon.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure my, dog could, do a better routing schedule for his team than.
We love you, Jim. I mean that with much love.
Yeah, we don't.
No.
I'm kidding.
I do.
But, we made the trip all the way up there. Like, it's a never-ending road.
Mm-hmm.
The sad thing is, like, 5 years before that, I drove all the way to Alaska with my dad with two semis.
Yeah.
And that was miserable. Like, I will never drive the Alaskan Highway ever again in my life. It is not worth it. I don't care about it. If I go to Alaska, it'll be on a plane. But anything more farther north than Edmonton, I have no interest going. Not worth it. Sorry, Brad.
So, let's talk a little bit about tonight and tomorrow night. Should we, Phil?
Before you do that, I am missing one shout-out. My buddy Brian Anger, live, he wants to know about the design on Vendetta.
Oh, no.
Was it tie-in with Redline Oil, or it just so happened to be a perfect storm with the?
No, I mean, my favorite color is red.
Okay.
And the guy on the side is actually something that is basically how my wife sees me.
Well, okay.
So normally before I got, old and out of shape, I always wore a flat brim hat. And it was basically just worked well with the skull and the beard. And I mean, it was something that we kind of created together. The flames has always been something that I've always had. Captain Insano was flamed.
Right.
Jack mm-hmm. Sarah was flamed. Those were the kind of the trucks that I always drove. The Iron Outlaw I created, Michael Arner designed it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I wanted to go a little bit something different, but I wanted to go with like a meaner cowboy than the guy I had. But you know what? It is what it is. But this here is 100% my idea. Well, not my wife's idea. It was something that we wanted to kind of put our stamp on and to let everybody know that we're here to take some names and kick some ass. That's just what we do.
So another unique thing about your truck is the body.
Yep.
Now, how did you come up with the body? Like, it's one of the most unique trucks in the industry.
Yep.
Definitely brings some eyes to it.
Yeah, it's a 51 crop top Chevy pickup. I wanted something old school. I've always loved old school trucks. I've always had my eye on like Captain's Curse and Blacksmith, like the older pickups that came out in the past. Those were just clean, beautiful trucks. And my dad had this, or a body similar to this, up in his loft. He bought it from some studio out of California. I can't remember why he had it or what he was doing with it, but it just looked just awesome, just how it was. But it had working doors. I mean, it was a single cab, the hood and the cab was all one piece. And he told me I can kind of have free range with it and do what I want. I shut the door. You know, they fiberglass the door shut, cut the hood off from the cab, so it was two pieces, and we got it to work on the truck, and then we haven't built the mold yet for it. And I actually did a show in Red Bluff, California, when someone decided to come into my lane and T-bone me, and he disintegrated the body. Like, it was in like 40,000 pieces. So pissed. And we actually had a display 2 weeks later at Phillips 66, who owns Redline Oil. And I had to do Salinas, California with no body because there was nothing left in my body. And then good old guy, what's his name? Jim Leonards.
Yes.
He actually helped me drive to Texas, and he helped me get out there early. Dylan Finley with Tantrum, he opened up his shop and let us come there, and we hurried and fiberglassed my body somewhat back together, and he printed some new vinyl and wrapped it up so it looked pretty good from about 50 feet. Redline was enjoying it, loved it. Then I did Houston, and then we actually went right back to Dylan's place and spent the next 4 days straight building a mold. That way I had a mold, so...
And you're all set and done.
Now I'm all set and done.
There you go.
I have a mold, and I can just start rolling this thing over every week and destroying it and just order another body.
So, you know, Mike, as we start to wind down here on this podcast, we really thank everybody for tuning in, and make sure you're liking and sharing this video, especially for everybody that might be tuning in at our normal time so they don't miss out on this awesome podcast with Mike. We're here in Yuma, Arizona.
Yes,
and there's an event here tonight. You're driving. You got your team here. You got Rad Attacks here as well. What's your expectations for this weekend?
You know, I'm just glad that we're actually doing shows.
Yeah.
Especially in Arizona. I mean, Arizona was locked up tighter than like Nevada and California.
Yeah, this is the first event in Arizona that we're at right now since February.
Right.
In short time's like 3 hours away.
Yeah, we're getting close.
Yep. So, you know, we got, we got pit party at 6.
Yes.
So we got a couple hours until then. But you know what? I was in Yuma last year. Fans here were great. Place is great. The dirt's a little sandy, but you know what? We'll have the track figured out. Should be a good, nice, clean show. Nothing drastic, nothing crazy. But you know what? We got 4 or 5 awesome drivers. We got both Sousas. Jacob in his truck, got Too Tall in his, and then myself in mine. So there's no slouches here. Everybody's going to be driving probably like straight dicks just to prove a point, and that's what it's all about. I mean, we're all here to have fun and put on a good show and enjoy the competition between one another.
Like you said, this is a heavy hitting lineup. You know, you got both Sousas here. I know they're going to be running hard against each other. The father-son rivalry, that's going to be something to watch out for. But, you know, just stay tuned to our page. You never know. We might go live during the show.
We're going to work on a couple different things down here in Yuma. You know, we're really appreciative to be down here at an event. We know some people aren't near events, or they haven't had events since, you know, as when this podcast is happening due to many shutdowns. So we're really appreciated that we got to be here and to try something different, especially with a guy I consider my personal life hero, Mike Christensen.
Appreciate that.
And you know, Mike, I'll make this our last question here and make sure you get, so you can get ready for the event. I ask this to end every podcast, almost every podcast. You've accomplished a lot in your career. You've had the name to back it up, and you've gone everywhere. But when it's all said and done, what do you want your legacy to be?
You know, I guess my legacy, I want it to be is like, you know, when people bring me up or talk about it, they'd be like, man, that guy was just such a good driver. You know, like they can go back to certain times and certain places and, you know, just remember like, man, that guy let everything out, lay it all out. I remember this from this place. I remember this from this place. Just to fulfill memories for fans all across the country and to be a part of, you know, the Team Case again, Throttle Monsters, and create something that not a lot of guys can create is what I want to be remembered by. I don't want to be remembered by, you know, company that, you know, just does things half-assed. Like, that's just not how we do it. Paul's dumped a lot of money and a lot of time into creating Throttle Monsters, and, you know, I've dumped a lot of time into creating it. And that's the beauty about mine and Paul's relationship. He has the money and I have the brains, and we've created such a monster between the two of us, with now 4 trucks going to 5. Like, we have a lot of cool things coming up, and a lot of cool things that we're going to be doing that, you know, people are going to be quite impressed with what we got going on. So stay tuned. I mean, there's more things to come. There's more things that we're going to come out with. And we also got a new 3D thing that we're doing. So it's going to be pretty awesome.
You tell it like it is, and you're not slowing down. Mike, yeah. It's always a pleasure being at that with you. Where can everyone follow you guys on social media?
Social media, we got Team Throttle Monsters on Facebook and Instagram. You can follow me personally. It's under my middle name, Michael, but it's spelled weird. It's M-I-K-E-A-L. But, you know what, you can pretty much find me on through social media, through Team Throttle Monsters. Plus all of our sponsors. I mean, I can't thank them enough. Our sponsors do a fantastic job with everything that we do, from Redline Oil, Brodix, Cylinder Heads, Jezel, FTI, Odyssey, FK. I mean, there's so many. Safety Clean is now a new one, and even Scott, Advanced Auto Parts. I mean, Advanced Auto Parts was out of the game probably for a good, 5-6 years now?
Right.
We're slowly working back into Advanced Auto Parts, and they came to us in Utah, and we've been kind of slowly working a relationship there, and man, Scott in Utah, dude, that dude is freaking awesome. That guy does anything and everything we want, and we got a lot of people interested in what we're doing, and you know, I can't thank them enough, and you know, especially our fans waiting it out and coming back when shows slowly come back into play. You know, and it's nice to see other companies also doing it. You know, you got Monster Jam this weekend going into Arlington.
Right.
Like, you know, we want everybody to go back to the normal of monster trucks.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, whether it's Monster Jam or Toughest Tour or Live a Little, Monster X, Throwdown, All-Stars. I mean, I know Brian Wagon has been doing shows out in Tennessee, mm-hmm. South Dakota, or South Carolina and Georgia. I mean, someone just stole his damn trailer, but... I mean, and I wouldn't wish that upon anybody.
Absolutely not. No.
You know, but it's nice that companies are slowly getting the option to come back and do shows. So I hope everybody the best. I hope everybody's shows are fantastic and fans keep coming out and supporting everybody. And I hope to see you at the next show sooner or later.
Absolutely. Mike, it's been a pleasure having you on here. We're trying something different here. We really appreciate Mike, even at the last minute, sitting down with us for a full podcast episode. Wouldn't you say so, Vinny?
Yes, I definitely want to say that. And I also want to say we appreciate all the hard work you've been putting in with the team these past couple months. You know, there's not a lot of shows going on, but you are one of the few teams that are running and actively running shows. And
right.
I just want to appreciate, you know, the hard work, the stressful time, and just want to say thank you.
Absolutely. You know, it's I'm glad you guys came out. It's fun to hang out with you guys, you know, talk a little trash, give each other a little shit, you know, even though you break your chairs.
Yeah, break a chair.
I figured I would have been the first guy to break a chair.
We do it all here. And if only you could see the table that this laptop is sitting on. It's my dad's old New York Giants tailgate table. This table is older than me. I grew up on this table, and it's doing a live podcast here in Yuma, Arizona. You got to love it.
Yeah, there's no way that table is like in 1800s.
We'll post a picture later on during the weekend here.
That's like a picnic table for like...
You know, when I put that table out, Mike thought we were doing the podcast on the table.
I did.
It's logistics.
I'm breaking chairs.
Don't worry. But all in all, it's been a great podcast here. Once again, got to thank Mike, Chris, and everybody here from Team Throttle Monster allowing us to even be on this podcast and doing this live in front of their own trucks at an event here in Yuma, Arizona. We're not slowing down. We say it every week here on the podcast. Make sure we said it a lot here on this podcast. That's because we came on at a different time. We usually broadcast at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern on Fridays. That's always changing, but that's when we're always live. We did a little different here this week, so make sure you should like and share this video so those that are coming in later on know that we did a podcast. We did it live here with Mike Christensen. If you want to catch the replays, if you want to catch some of the past episodes, we've interviewed a lot of Team Throttle Monster guys. We've had Jeff Souza and Hunter Souza and Dawson Reyes on our podcast. If you want to hear their stories, they're in the archives, and you can find them here on our Facebook page. Check out the video tab, live video podcast. You can see the live feed. And if not, you can hear our sound wherever you can find podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. Wherever the sound is, we're there. And also, you can check out our YouTube page where we upload this same video just on YouTube form. It's going to be a great weekend here in Yuma. We're done.
God, no, I hope so.
I'm not done. I have one more thing to say.
Okay.
We're not done in Yuma. We have more content coming this weekend.
This was our podcast episode, but stay tuned to our social media, especially here to Facebook.
That's That's all I got.
That's all he's got, because Vinny's got some surprises up his sleeve. We'll see you guys later on the page, and also next week at our normal time
he's got
with another podcast, with another great monster.